Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Senior Editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Brian Grossberg, the Director of the Hartford Headache Center and a Professor of Neurology at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine, to talk about the results of a recently published study that he and colleagues conducted, which assessed the knowledge of women's healthcare providers in the management of migraine in their patients, a population that is, according to some estimates, over 70% women. Let's dive in.
I'm the director of the Hartford Healthcare Headache Center, and I'm also a professor of neurology at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine. I think it's helpful to have a little bit of background about the study. So the project that we did was a close collaboration between headache specialists at the Hartford Healthcare Headache Center in Connecticut and women's healthcare providers across the entire state of Connecticut. So it wasn't just within our healthcare system, it spanned multiple healthcare systems and several hundred women's healthcare providers. And we know from previous research that migraine is often managed within the primary care setting. However, many women consider their women's healthcare providers to be their primary care provider, and very little is really known about migraine knowledge and treatment within the setting. And so what we wanted to do is really understand what is known by women's healthcare providers about migraine knowledge and treatment. And we viewed this collaboration as an opportunity for learning about targets for future collaborations and education for women's healthcare providers. So that's the spark that led to this study.
And obviously, you know, you mentioned a lot of women look at these physicians as their primary care providers. And as you know, a topic of conversation at the annual American Headache Society meeting is always sort of the primary care knowledge of migraine, with it being such a common, you know, 40 million people in the United States that have this condition. I'm curious, before, again, we get into the sort of the study results, what have those kind of ongoing conversations over the last couple years, decade, however long they've been going on for you, what have they kind of taught you about patients' needs outside of the migraine specialist?
So, you know, the one thing that always resonates with me, and you quoted the number, is demand far outstrips supply, right? There are only a limited number of certified headache specialists that have either finished an exam or completed a headache fellowship. And so the ratio, if you will, of a certified headache specialists to the population is never going to be met. And so what that does is it creates an opportunity. It's not a challenge, it's just an opportunity, which is what the study is looking to support, is trying to understand what is known by primary care providers, who are the gateway. They are the first people who are primarily seeing people who may come in for the complaint of migraine, and then understand what they know about diagnosis, both in terms of evaluation and then treatment, looking at it from a multidisciplinary standpoint, combining medication, non-medication. And so it's been looked at in the primary care provider setting, but it's never been looked at in the women's healthcare provider setting. And we learned many things. And one of the things that we learned is certainly previous research studies show that anywhere from 20 to 40% of women's healthcare providers serve as the primary care provider for their patients, which was even surprising to me. And in the study, we learned that women's healthcare providers are serving as the primary care provider for approximately a third of their patients. So that's really in line what has been thought about, but not substantiated. And the majority feel comfortable diagnosing migraine in these patients, but only about 18% felt very comfortable. And so once again, the larger percentage felt somewhat comfortable. And however, some of the challenges appear also to become with prescribing migraine-specific and preventive medications for the same patients. So that's another area of opportunity. We found that the majority were not prescribing preventive medications for their patients, only about 13%, and nearly half were prescribing migraine-specific medications like triptans or what are known as CGRP small molecules. When asked about keeping a headache diary, around 40% are not even routinely asking about headache at their annual appointments. So they may feel comfortable making a diagnosis, but if they're not keeping a headache diary to track objective data, it's very hard to end up then making a diagnosis. We also learned that many providers were not referring their patients for non-medication approaches to migraine treatment, you know, things that have grade A evidence like cognitive behavioral therapy, relaxation skills training, and biofeedback. And, you know, once again, that I think was surprising also, understanding that the patient population they serve are people who may have who may be pregnant at some point and may have limitations on certain medications. So that was something else that we found that was interesting. We know there could be many challenges with these types of referrals for non-medication approaches, including finding the right provider, offering these services, insurance coverage. And one of the other things that we learned was that women's healthcare providers were really enthusiastic about the idea of having future educational opportunities for learning more about migraine treatment. So, you know, the takeaways for us really were not necessarily what is not known about migraine diagnosis and treatment by women's healthcare providers, but rather the areas that could be targeted through educational interventions.
Absolutely. That's certainly interesting and good to hear that they're interested in learning more because, you know, like I said, it's been an ongoing conversation that I've been having as well with physicians that work in this specialty about, you know, particularly in primary care, how there is this sort of educational gap that just needs to be addressed. But you never actually, you know, find out, are the providers interested or do they have the ability to the time to sit down and actually, you know, learn this information. So I'd imagine the interest is sort of step one in addressing that knowledge gap.
Yes.
So I'm curious, were there any other results that you found interesting? Obviously, you know, you guys covered a lot and you sort of went through a little bit of the findings, but were there any other results that you found interesting and were any of them sort of surprising or unexpected in any way and or concerning in any way? I mean, like you said, it seems like a lot of positives to take away, but I'm curious if there was any concern.
So certainly positives, but certainly things that, you know, kind of raised that's important to know. We were surprised that the providers, once again, service primary care providers for about a third of their patients, right? So meaning that they're managing all aspects of care for these individuals. And as I said, although they feel comfortable diagnosing migraine, only a small percentage felt very comfortable. But there are certainly areas of educational opportunity related to migraine treatment. Once again, only 13% of the providers are prescribing preventive medications for migraine. And if we compare this to a previous study of primary care providers, that's compared with 80% of primary care providers that's found in a similar research study. So a very wide gap. And that probably speaks to the fact that they may not be getting this level of training during their residency training or even following their training. We're also looking forward to additional ways to collaborate with women's healthcare providers in the future around targeted educational programs. Now that we know more about what is known and not known about migraine management, certainly we looked at hormonal management. And that was important to note too. Nearly all of the women's healthcare providers were very familiar with the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Yet when it came time to talk about treatment of migraine without aura versus with aura, there was much less comfort level with prescribing hormonal therapies for those patients who had migraine with aura. So once again, that is another area of opportunity to implement both during residency training as well as afterwards. And so one of the points that you ended up raising was, is there something that I would be concerned about? And I would probably say, I guess my advice to women who would suffer from migraine, who they should turn to for care and kind of what questions they should ask, is probably recommending that if they experience headaches and migraine, really to, you know, speak with their primary care providers. And if it's a women's health care provider, certainly to speak with them in order to get a diagnosis and treatment, which really should encapsulate both medication, non-medication approaches. That being said, if they're unable to obtain a definitive diagnosis and the treatments are not tailored, both medication, non-medication, to their attack that they're experiencing with their migraine, then it's at that point they really should start to look into a referral for a headache specialist or a neurologist. So the benefit of this study is that we would be looking to do pretty much a statewide educational effort, which has never been done before, with women's healthcare providers to, you know, introduce case-based educational curriculum literally into residency programs, and then offer it to people who've already finished their training as well, and doing this in a combination of virtually and non-virtually.
Now, where are we at in sort of the process of actually getting that, you know, from ideation to reality in terms of that actual program? I would imagine that would be, you know, as you said, it's never been done before, so certainly a heavy lift. But do you think that that's something that ideally could roll out within the next couple of years?
So I would tell you it's going to be looking to roll out in the next half a year. So, so the program that we are developing and implementing first into a primary care residency program and then into select neurology residency programs is titled Hedjucation. So forgive me if it sounds corny, but ultimately it is a case-based educational curriculum that is interactive. So rather than being pedantic and giving lectures and providing information, it really kind of helps guide the audience, where the audience of learners are selecting the medication, then have to end up stating why they would be selecting the medication. How does it come? What doses does it come in? How would one titrate it up? What are the benefits and potential side effects? What are potential drug-drug interactions? So it's real-world headache medicine, for lack of a better word, which actually gives that familiarity and that back and forth interaction that hopefully should end up changing treatment.
And now, do you think that these knowledge gaps, obviously, you know, some studies have been done to sort of look at, you know, and there is literature that exists looking at sort of the overall primary care knowledge gaps. Do you think between, obviously, this looking at women specifically and their providers, do you think that these knowledge gaps are relatively similar for women and men?
So we didn't parse the data into looking at these providers and what their knowledge base was based on men or women. One of the interesting things that we found is that we, of the women's healthcare providers, there was a certain percentage that were queried during their training. And what we found is it seemed that their comfort level was greater in some of the treatments. And that may be part of the, you know, kind of the training that they were in to evaluate patients in a clinic setting. But ultimately, there wasn't any difference that was seen gender-wise that was noted.
So then, you know, just before I let you go, obviously, for the clinical community, for those who are, you know, perhaps going through training or working as a women's healthcare provider or as a migraine specialist, what's sort of your takeaway for them in terms of how they can either help improve this or what they should be aware of regarding, you know, your study?
Yeah, so specifically for primary care providers, the American Headache Society is putting together information that's on their website, which is, you know, which is easily attainable and viewed. They're also developing podcasts that can be listened to. The discussion that I had, the initiative that I had about education, it's kind of taking that one step further, which is, you know, here's a patient that's coming to you. Now tell me how you'd work through it and why. And And ultimately, my feeling is that will have a very large ripple effect down the road, so that we're looking to pilot initially and then scale it. So you can imagine that that is, it will have multiplicative effects down the road. That's ultimately what I'm hoping will reach all people with training, though it will take time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.